time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Aaron Gupta. Aaron Gupta is co-founder of The Independent, I-N-D-Y Pendant, and the Occupied Wall Street Journal, and former international news editor of The Guardian Newsweekly. He has visited more than 40 occupations in 27 states, covering the Occupy Wall Street movement nationwide for The Guardian, Al Jazeera, Salon, Truthout, The Progressive, The Nation, and other publications. And he is a regular commentator on Democracy Now! And the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and Al Jazeera. Aaron, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Great to be with you today.
So tell us, how did you come about your covering of the Occupy movement? What motivated you to start that?
One, simply, it was in my backyard. I live in Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, and so it's just a quick bike ride from where I live. But more important, I've been interested in covering social movements for a long time because I think any sort of analysis shows that's where change really comes from. Positive change in our society occurs from social movements. And there's been a lot of unrest over the years in terms of globally and also somewhat in the United States in response to the political and social conditions. And particularly what I'm talking about is the economic depression we're in. By all standards, we are in a depression. The real unemployment rate is about 15% to 18%, where actually this December will be the sixth year of this economic downturn. There's absolutely no real hope in sight of ending it, and it's probably just going to get worse given the policies that both parties are enacting. And so I try to find and look for kind of those hints, those stirrings of movements that are really bringing together a broad group of people under one banner, under an idea, and can affect profound social change. And in terms of the Occupy movement in New York, there had been a lot of ferment going on. There had been a lot of mass marches in the spring of 2011. There was one that was well over 10,000 students, labor, community groups, and they were trying to do something different. This is back in May. In terms of just having a march, they were doing teach outs in the Wall Street area. Then in June, there was this 3-week encampment near City Hall called Bloombergville that was inspired by students and community groups, and they were basically going after the budget cuts. There were also some other attempts to occupy over the summer. So if we actually go back and look at the history of the Occupy movement just in New York City, there was a lot going on in 2011. And of course, finally, this spark turned into really just a raging fire across the country. I knew about the pre-organizing. I'd known about call out from Adbusters for people to it was like bring tents and the question is, I think, is like what is our one demand. Interestingly, now I cover a lot of economic issues, and there's this website, this financial news website called MarketWatch that I read every day, and I was seeing most of the coverage I was seeing outside of the alternative press was coming from this financial news website, and it's actually owned by the News Corporation, and they had some columnists who were really speaking favorably of Occupy Wall Street, why it was needed, why it was important. And it was actually really quite bizarre to be finding this on a financial news website, whereas, of course, the corporate media otherwise, the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, whatever, were not touching it with a 100-foot pole. And so I had heard plenty about it, and I decided to go down there on September 17th. I was skeptical, but at the same time, over the years, I've learned to be skeptical of my own skepticism, partly because of Seattle and the World Trade Organization ministerial in 1999. That completely came out of left field. I knew about the organizing there as well. I didn't come out for it. But the fact that it turned into such a dramatic event and that the protests shut it down, it was really a remarkable breath of fresh air. And so even though I was somewhat skeptical of the Occupy Wall Street movement, because the organizing to me, from what I understood, the pre-organizing seemed really amorphous. The decision making structure seemed to be, you know, it was kind of too loosey-goosey. Still, I was like, you know, let me go down there and see what happens. And I went down there. It felt different. You know, it felt like, okay, this is not the usual protest. And as it turned out, it wasn't. And I started going down almost every day and just watched it grow and develop. The first day was very interesting because I did see a fair number of people I know who are politically active in New York, you know, what I term the usual suspects, but in a good way. These are people who really spend their lives in the trenches doing the hard work of political organizing. As I walked around Zuccotti Park that night, I was just striking up random conversations, and I was meeting people from across the country, Connecticut, Austin, Texas, the Bay Area, Portland. And again, one of the things that struck me was I actually met very few people from New York City, at least new people. And some of the people I talked to had come from across the country. They couldn't even really explain why they were there. And the closest analogy I could, it's really struck me. It was like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Richard Dreyfuss's character and all those other characters who are just drawn to this mysterious force and they don't know what motivates them. And that's how people were talking. They would get this wide-eyed look and kind of, you know, turn their head and stare into the distance and just like, I know I had to be here, you know, and they couldn't articulate exactly why they were here. But nonetheless, I was just like, okay, this is interesting that all these people from across the country have been attracted to it. And so, of course, it just grew into something really amazing and profound over the few weeks. And my partner, Michelle Fawcett, and I thought, like, this is literally a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because by early October, you know, reports were that these encampments were just springing up across the country. And even in our digital wired age, I'm a big believer and you have to be on the ground and see how things are developing. So we're like, let's hit the road. Let's go and go from occupation to occupation. So in the fall, we basically drove across the country, hit about 30 occupations during this period. And while we were driving across, we were on the road for almost 3 months, and we saw it rise and then started to see many of them fall, because by November, of course, you started to get the whole wave of evictions and attacks on the encampment. But nonetheless, it was a really, I'd say, a life-changing experience, being able to meet all these people and to see just the phenomenal diversity of the movement. This is, I think, really one of the most diverse movements in U.S. History in terms of the different classes it's drawn from, the different attitudes, the different social groups, racial groups, ethnic groups, you know, people's position in society. It really just motivated so many people throughout society and across a political spectrum to identify with it.
So how does this movement compare with other movements that you've observed over the years?
There's this interesting phenomenon, I think, and I'm talking more about the left. I've also studied the Tea Party movement a good bit. I've gone to Tea Party meetings, and I think it's foolish to dismiss the Tea Party as a AstroTurf movement. It's very much a real movement. Now, of course, they're just kind of doing the bidding of the corporate elite, but nonetheless, these people really believe it. And the other part of it is, it's why is it so hard to believe? A lot of progressives and leftists are always running around talking about how racist America is. And so it's like, okay, you believe this country is totally racist, but then why is it so hard to believe that you have this essentially racist movement, the Tea Party movement? And it is fundamentally racist. It's a movement of older white conservative Americans who want to essentially punish anyone they see as undeserving, and they use coded language in that, in terms of immigrants, which is refers to Latinos, people on welfare, which is coding for African Americans, and yet they have absolutely no problem with the home interest mortgage deduction, which, if you actually look at the subsidy there, that is greater than all social programs combined, apart from Medicare, or rather Medicaid. The ability to deduct the interest from your taxes on your mortgage, and who's that benefiting? It's largely benefiting the white middle class. And so if you were really serious about cutting the budget deficit, you would demand that this would be cut, first of all. But if we look at, I think, recent history, and by that I'm referring to post-World War II U.S. history, this is really the first mass movement that puts class back on the agenda. The we are the 99%, the target of Wall Street, the slogan the 1%, which of course has been completely co-opted by liberal groups and is kind of stealthily being used by Obama. As an aside, even as the government is attacking the Occupy movement, they've framed basically these hapless kids, both in Chicago and Cleveland, who are affiliated with the Occupy movement, on terrorism charges. So even as Obama's FBI is trying to attack and destroy the movement, back up to its dirty COINTELPRO tricks, it's Obama is using Occupy language in trying to win re-election. He would be having no traction against Romney in terms of trying to paint him as this wealthy elitist who outsources jobs, is out of touch with average Americans, who's hiding all his wealth overseas. All of this comes from the Occupy movement and the anger that it crystallized against the concentration of economic and political power in this country. Now, in terms of how Occupy relates to other social movements, like I said, the diversity, I think, is really remarkable. The anti-war movement, the anti-Iraq war movement, that was, I think, in a lot of ways somewhat partisan, or very partisan, because, unfortunately, we've seen that partisanship cut both ways, right? So I think you did get a lot of independents who were against the Iraq war, but really it was kind of the Democrats and liberals who provided the bulk of people who would come out to the really big demonstrations. Like any social movement of significance over the last 50 years, it was organized by the left. But the huge marches, of February 15th, 2003, the one following Cindy Sheehan's encampment in September of 2005, all the various other demonstrations in the first part of 2003, you were only getting hundreds of thousands of people coming out if you were kind of getting liberals and independents coming out. You know, this was not something that was really opposed by Republicans. Now, the Occupy movement, as we went across the country, we were encountering in a lot of places self-identified conservatives. We stopped being surprised, by the time we got to, I think, Mobile, Alabama. It's just like, okay, they're part of the movement everywhere. Tons of military veterans, of course, labor. You would get a lot of Ron Paul types, a lot of the and the Fed folks, libertarians. It was really across the political spectrum, and that's both great and problematic at the same time, because it becomes very hard then to articulate a position beyond opposition. You know, how do you say what you're actually for if you have opinions ranging from conservative and libertarian to anarchist and socialist? You're going to get people at each other's throats. The one area I think that has been problematic for the Occupy movement in terms of its social composition is around race. It varied greatly across the country. Some cities, and one of the interesting things about it is it's very much an urban movement. It's just like, of course, you would have Occupy movements in small towns, but it's not really a rural phenomena. But I think one of the things that deeply motivated it is it showed us that we lack any sort of common public space, any sort of democratic commons in this country. It's been completely colonized by corporations. You know, you can go into any city. Seattle is a perfect example. You know, why are you in downtown? You're in downtown to consume. It's not a space for actually vibrant public life. If there is any sort of public life, it's commodified. It's a cultural festival. It's a music festival, and you have to pay admission. And the thing about Occupy, I would stand on the steps of Zuccotti Park often, and it was kind of the eastern edge of it was elevated, and you could stand up there and look down on everything below. And I would just really stand there and watch as hundreds of people would engage in all these exchanges, and they're exchanging bedding, they're exchanging clothing, there's food being given out, there's a library, healthcare, counseling, arts, music, and just all this exchange, and none of it was mediated by money. Of course, you know, the goods were donated, so there's money at some point. But in terms of that space itself, there was no exchange of money whatsoever. And it was just really stunning and really refreshing, because you felt like you could breathe again. It's like, wow, there is a different type of society that is really possible. That isn't just about, like, you know, I want to buy this for that much, you know. And I think that's why it really captured people's imaginations, that it showed them physically that we can live in a different world, that we don't need corporations, we don't need the state, we don't need the mainstream media, we certainly don't need the war on terror and the police state that we live under. It was a rejection of everything of our governing apparatus, and that really frightened the government. And so, you know, this is, I think, a very different experience politically, socially, than what we've been used to in this country, a very different type of movement. And, you know, over time, the contradictions started to really surface, that, you know, that the occupations in a lot of cities became an end in and of themselves. You know, that the decision-making structure, these general assemblies, it's a nice ideal, but how functional is it to have a general assembly of 500 people, or even much less, you know, 5,000 people or 50,000 people? There's no way that you're going to be able to come to any sort of agreement or real discussion, because there's no way everyone can have their say beyond, you know, maybe if it's like, you know, 50 or 100 people, that's probably the outer limits where you can have a genuine democratic forum in terms of the way it's set up. And so people weren't able to deal with the issue of a representative democracy in any form. And, you know, because I think there's this kind of knee-jerk hatred or at least contempt of it in our society, because, you know, we have a representative democracy and look how disastrous it's turned out. But more, I think the problem is, you know, do people really have control over this system? In any case, though, I think it's really been remarkable for showing what are the possibilities that we can live in a very different type of society that isn't all about commodification, commodifying our labor, commodifying our housing, our healthcare, our education for the interests of private corporations. But together, people really can, I think, decide their lives a lot better than the supposed experts we have to listen to.
Well, speaking of supposed representative democracy, we have a major presidential election coming up here. We've got the RNC happening this next week. One of the things, in with rare exceptions, that the Occupy movement doesn't appear to have been engaged with is the electoral system. Here in Seattle, we have, you know, I think one candidate that's from Occupy that's running at the state level. Do you see that as something that people should be getting engaged in? And what do you see as the value of, like, third parties that are running in the presidential election?
I think, you know, Martin Luther King said that he was neither Democrat or Republican. And he said that for a very good reason, that he was interested in changing something deeper rather than, you know, who's the cast in Washington. And here's the thing. Elections are about moving a candidate, or at most a party. Movements move the whole system. And Occupy, it really reshaped the debate in a matter of weeks. You know, before Occupy, was anyone even talking about the 1% or the 99%? This wasn't even part of political discourse, and now it's become a standard part of political discourse, and everybody knows what it is. And Obama is very much running an Occupy Wall Street campaign, even as they're using Democrats, you know, are responsible, because who's in charge of the cities? It tends to be Democratic mayors. You know, they're the ones who are attacking the Occupy movement. We know they've been coordinating with Homeland Security. The FBI is ginning up these entrapment plots in Cleveland and Chicago. And yet the way he's going after Romney, you know, this guy is a wealthy elitist who wants to outsource jobs and doesn't care about average Americans. He's hiding all his money in, you know, these shady overseas tax havens. He's basically saying everything but, you know, he is the 1%. And then if you look at groups who are doing the grunt work for the Obama campaign, Move On, Rebuild the Dream, Organized Labor, they're constantly talking about this is about the 99% versus the 1%. They've been calling Mitt Romney Mr. 1% since last year. They've been actually trying to co-opt the Occupy movement. Rebuild the Dream, Move On, and SEIU essentially created new movement called the 99% movement, and to try and coast on the energy of the Occupy movement and take it and turn it into elections. And I don't have a problem with people, you know, if they want to go out and vote for Obama. You know, this seems to be this is a debate every 4 years, you know, between, like, oh, you know, the Democrats are so horrible. And they, of course, they are horrible. You know, it's like we are now in 6 or 7 different wars because of this administration. Obama has done stuff Bush and Cheney never dreamed of. He is asserting the right to extrajudicial and assassination of American citizens and carrying it out. The U.S. is still doing extraordinary renditions, still engaging in torture, massive spying on the domestic front, absolutely no progress on global warming. Or actually, there is progress. It's getting worse. You know, he endorses fracking. They're going to open up the Arctic Ocean. They already are opening up the Arctic Ocean to oil exploration. He's made an absolute mess of the mortgage crisis, actually made it far worse with his policies. They've basically kicked labor right in the face, attacking teachers unions, attacking the United Auto Workers, doing absolutely nothing to get any even mildly reformist legislation passed to help labor organizing. And you can go on and on and on and on. And Obama is really the third Bush term. But nonetheless, the Republicans are even scarier. You know, what I would argue is that we need to have a more sophisticated understanding. What the Democrats do is they take right-wing extremism and turn it into bipartisan consensus, such as with the war on terror. And then, so what that means is the next iteration of the Republican Party gets more extreme. And yeah, you know, Romney and Ryan would be really scary. They will really try and do away with Social Security and Medicare, in my opinion. But of course, Obama has endorsed that from day one. A couple of weeks before his inauguration, he called for entitlement reform, which is nothing but code word for cuts to Social Security and Medicare. You know, and there's also this phenomena of, you know, Nixon going to China. The idea is like only this, really, gung-ho warmonger could go to China. Only Clinton could end welfare. You know, the Republicans could never end welfare. It could only take Clinton. Similarly, only the Democrats can end Social Security and Medicare. You know, and Obama has endorsed the whole austerity ideology, even though it's stupid from this simplest economic standpoint. We're repeating the mistakes of the Great Depression all over again. If you want a more recent example, look at what's going on in Europe. They're enforcing austerity policies, and it's just been an utter chaos and horrifying what's happening to countries like Greece and Spain and Ireland and Portugal. And yet this is the policies that Obama endorsed. So I think we do need more sophisticated understanding. We need to put energy into independent movement building. I'm not a big fan either of third parties because the field is just so tilted in favor of corporate interests. I mean, you know, you can run the argument is, well, you run third party candidates for education to show people that there are different ideas, and sure, that's fine. But in terms of actually trying to get people elected who are fundamentally different, it virtually never happens. And secondly, even if it does happen, they're so constrained by other forces because the way that corporations control the media, they control the lobbying process, that once they get into power, they become captive to all those interests. The notion of pouring all this energy into elections is based on this false assumption that it's a level playing field, when of course it's not.
Only about a minute and a half. So what's the solution? Where should people be pouring their energy into?
Well, I think independent movement building. You know, it's so Occupy has a, you know, I don't want to minimize the state repression. It's been really severe. The fact that we see, you know, just these stormtroopers attacking the movement all across the country, what happened in the fall and winter is and there was really little outcry. There's popular outcry, but there's, you know, none in Congress, none among politicians, certainly not in the media, that attacking peaceful people just expressing their dissent is really stunning. And so, but there are also, I think, a lot of internal problems in the movement, you know, having to deal with the decision making and, you know, this type of love of the ultra democratic form, and, you know, a lack of focus and strategic thinking. But the social conditions are going to get worse. Now, I'm not one of these people who thinks it has to get worse before it gets better, but objectively, it is going to get worse. The economy is going to get worse. Environmental conditions are going to get worse. There's going to be more job outsourcing, more cutting of benefits. You know, the number of homelessness in this country is absolutely staggering. Something like 10% of households are doubled up in this country, and technically those people are homeless. You know, you don't have to be on the streets, but if you've had to move your family into, you know, your brother's house, and now you have two families under one roof, I mean, that creates a lot of stress. So there will be more social outbursts. You know, the question is how they're shaped and how they really attack and go after the privileges and reshape our society. And what I'm hoping is people learn, you know, what worked with the Occupy movement, and more important, what didn't work with the Occupy movement, and can have even more success next time.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you.